A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello and welcome to Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. I'm Dori Shafrir.
I'm Kate Spencer.
And we're not experts.
But we're just two friends who like to talk about serums.
We sure are.
But we are just two friends. I skipped the we are.
Oh, yes.
Important part of the script.
Indeed. Thank you for correcting that, Kate.
You know, I just had to take a second go at it, Dori. We've only been saying those words for a year and a half.
It's true.
And sometimes they get stuck in my mouth.
It happens. You're looking very springy today.
Well, you know, I'm finally like feeling the fire of spring.
I'm into it.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I'm wearing a very pretty dress. Yeah. It's very warm here in sunny Southern California.
It is suddenly warm.
The air smells like beautiful flowers, mm-hmm. like jasmine and orange blossom. Mm-hmm.
Chrysanthemum.
Mm-hmm. I'm just mm-hmm. I'm feeling the spring spirit.
I'm in black.
It's the most Dori Shafrir moment. Oh my God. Dori, well, you know, my mom used to wear black to weddings.
Oh, that's
like summer weddings.
That.
Yeah, she was hardcore. So I love a good black dress.
I mean,
you can never go wrong in black.
It's true.
Are you not feeling the spring spirit?
No, I am. I mean, I'm wearing a dress.
Yeah, also,
which was
like,
my nod to the spring spirit.
Your clothing options are limited.
This is very true. I'm also wearing sandals.
Yeah, so you're in the spirit. Also black.
Also black. But I'm in the spirit.
You do look like you could be working at a very chic downtown art gallery.
Oh, why, thank you.
Like, that is your definite vibe today.
Thank you so much.
In my humble opinion.
I mean, this is the Miranda Bennett dress I got for our South by Southwest.
It's really great. And it's a nursing dress,
right? It is a nursing dress. It has snaps.
Gotta love a snap.
So I could just bust out the boob anytime I want.
Well, someday soon we're going to be recording this podcast with your boob out.
I mean.
And a baby out. Maybe a baby at it. Maybe just a boob out.
Anyway.
Sorry, I just really took us on a journey.
How
anyway,
are
hello.
You?
Well, in addition to feeling, having a spring in my step.
If you will. And I do.
I'm okay.
Uh-huh.
I'm coming off a deep health anxiety spiral, which listeners of the podcast have already heard about. And but I'm coming out on the other end of it.
Okay.
I had a really intense therapy session about it.
Okay.
Where my therapist like really kind of made me like address some things, like push through what would happen if all my health anxiety fears actually came true.
Ooh.
It was really interesting. Yeah.
How did you feel?
Weirdly like relieved.
Okay.
Weirdly relieved. Yeah.
Sometimes it does help to sort of play out the worst case scenario.
Yeah. And truly, like, she was like, and what if the worst thing does happen?
Mm-hmm.
What are the steps that you'll take?
Yes.
Like, what are, and it was like, oh, fuck, like, this is really intense to actually think about.
Yes.
And then think about in a way that is also, like, weirdly practical and not just me having a really deep emotional panic attack about something. So it was very interesting.
This is what I did with IVF.
Really?
Yes.
Like just on your own.
Yes.
That's right. I remember when we talked about it on the podcast.
I played out the worst case scenario.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then I was like, what would I do?
Yeah.
And then I calmed down.
It did help me feel a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
I should also say that I went to this therapy session wearing this new sweatshirt that I bought that just said feelings on it. and my necklace that says anxiety.
Oh, yes. And then you came over after.
Yeah. My therapist was like, I love it.
And then my husband was like, I love your sweatshirt.
But you know what I actually also did last week is I took a new exercise class. So something that I have been doing in my new journey to connect with myself is think about what exercise. I love physical movement. I like exercising. And what exercise brings me like real pure joy?
Yeah.
And for me, that is dancing. And I used to take some variations of like basic dance classes, and I haven't done it in a while. And I went to one morning last week, and it was bliss. It was so great.
Dance is the best.
Well, I thought of you like while it was happening, and I thought of all the videos I've watched of you at Broadway Dance Class, because I do go on their Instagram and try all to find you in the audience.
Euphoric videos.
But it is a euphoric, it's such a euphoric feeling. And this class, it's if you're in Los Angeles, it's a dance class called Pony Sweat. And they have a few instructors, and it happens at a few places, mostly on the east side of Los Angeles. And it just was so joyful. It's a really inclusive, welcoming space. Everyone welcome, everyone supported. The instructor was amazing, and it was challenging. And
that's
amazing.
And I like
rocked it out.
Yeah, you did.
And there were many times where I shuffled into somebody because I didn't quite know the moves, but I never felt judged. You know, you've gone to those classes where you're like doing it wrong.
Yes.
And it's not a safe space to mess
up.
But this was, and it was so much fun, and I really loved it. So I'm going to go back.
Yay.
And I'm going to just keep trying to, you know, like, dance is something I haven't done in a while, and I really love a group dance class.
Yes. It's very invigorating.
I know you do.
Yeah. You are preaching to the choir.
I
know. Here.
I truly, you were on my brain, because this was like dancing to like pop music and like Robin and. Like, what would this be like dancing to show tunes? Would I be as into it? I don't know.
Look, I am not into musical theater.
But you're into the movements.
Yes.
Which
I'm
is
into
awesome.
The joy.
Yeah, the joy. And truly, like, exercising because it feels joyful has not been my frame of mind for a while.
Yes.
It's been like exercising to like tone up, or like because I'm going to want to eat a big meal, I should should burn 500 calories, like all that just fucking toxic thinking that I am still very attached to and I'm working on. So anyway.
Do they take video in this class?
I mean, possibly. They didn't. I don't think it was posted online, I'll share the instructor's Instagram with
you. Just going to look for you.
I mean, Dory, it is a scene. I'm like, you know, one of the tallest people. I'm really, my limbs go very long.
I had looked into taking this class at one point, and I think I decided it was too much of a schlep for me.
Well, you know, once this child makes its appearance on Earth and you're feeling like some movement, I will go with you.
All right. Okay.
You will see a new side of me.
I can't wait.
How have you been, my friend? In addition to embracing spring with an all-black ensemble.
This is really my true essence.
It honestly is like your purest form. I love it so much.
It's funny. This came up on Excellent Adventure once when I just like offhandedly said something about being a sullen teen. And Matt was like, what do you mean? You were a sullen teen. And I was like, do you know me? Like,
seems like the most obvious.
Thank you. Like, I feel like... What did you think I was like as a teenager?
What did he say?
I guess he didn't realize how like dark I was. It was very strange.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's a glass half full kind of person a lot of times, I think.
Except then he's not. I don't know. It was weird.
Well, you're a full glass to him.
Oh, that's so nice. I'm going to cry.
Do it.
Well, I went on my solo baby moon last week.
Was it amazing?
It was amazing. I went to a resort, essentially, outside of Santa Barbara.
By yourself?
By myself.
For 2 days?
For 2 nights.
Mm-hmm.
It was beautiful. I didn't leave the hotel.
Why would you?
Why would I?
Where would you go?
Exactly. I was like, well, then I'd have to like get my car and drive somewhere. I'll just stay here.
I love the solo baby moon concept.
Yeah, you know, it was really nice. I took baths. I got a prenatal massage.
Yes.
I just treated myself.
You had a cheese plate, I saw.
I had a cheese plate. I was like, I'm going to eat dinner at the bar.
Oh, the best. Oh, the best.
And then I was like, I'm going to get a cheese plate for myself. Yeah.
Yes,
I'm going to really live a little.
You are living large.
I am. I got a mocktail.
Tori, I love all of this.
So yeah, so it was great. And then when I came home, Matt had put together the IKEA dresser and daybed.
And it looks fantastic because
it looks fantastic. They almost killed him
putting it together.
Yes.
And so the crib has not been built yet.
The crib has not been built yet because he was trying to fix an amplifier of his, and he picked up an old amp that weighs like 75 pounds and he threw out his back.
I mean, the new baby needs that amp, so it's important for the amp
exactly.
to get done.
I said, you better fix that back of yours before
you're bending down to pick up a
baby comes. Yeah. But prior to him, you know, throwing out his back, he put together these very complicated IKEA pieces of furniture.
If you ever want to like truly get into your soul.
Yeah. I mean, at one point I texted him and I was like, how's the dresser going? And he was like, we're not speaking. He and the dresser.
Oh.
We're not speaking.
That's a big ass dresser.
It's huge. It's 8 drawers.
Yeah. My husband and I have put together that same dresser. It's the Hemnes
dresser. The Hemnes dresser.
A beautiful dresser.
It is a lovely dresser.
I love the Hemnes line at IKEA.
And the daybed is also from the Hemnes line.
Hemnes, I think we have, one of our kids has a Hemnes drawer set right now.
I mean.
It's gorgeous.
It's also cheap.
I would say it's affordable, yeah.
Like, especially compared to all the other furniture I was looking at.
No, and IKEA furniture's pretty nice.
Some of it is.
Yes, you've got a kind of, it's trial and error. I mean, this yes. table we're sitting at right now, this dining room table is IKEA.
Yeah, but it's actual wood.
It is actual wood.
Like, I think as long as you stick to some actual wood, you're fine.
We should do a whole episode, not just about IKEA, but in IKEA.
Ooh.
Do you think we could walk around like this? And record an episode in IKEA?
Yeah, probably. Both Lane and Sammy are nodding.
Yeah, we could also do an episode in Costco.
The problem is the sound would be terrible.
It would, especially in Costco. Sammy's now yes. actively nodding.
So it might annoy everyone.
Okay, but maybe in the cafe afterward we could meet up. We could do a walkthrough of IKEA and then...
Okay.
We'll talk about this. This off the air.
I'm down.
Okay.
So I was very grateful that he had done that. It took him a very long time. He basically devoted 2 days.
Yeah, that's a lot.
To putting them together.
Way to go.
Way to go, Matt.
And it must feel good because you have been feeling a little bit unsure about getting everything done.
Totally.
Just seeing that done. You put yes. the baby's clothes away.
I put the baby's clothes away. I washed all his clothes. I washed everything from newborn to 3 months and put it away.
Great. You're so and then on top
I,
of things.
Then I labeled everything.
I saw, Dory. You were really...
There's a drawer for newborn clothes, and then there's a drawer for 0 to 3 months. Also, I should point out, every single piece of clothing is a hand-me-down.
Oh, nice.
I have bought nothing.
That's awesome.
Yeah. There's like a few onesies that were on my registry that people bought,
okay.
but I have not bought anything, which wow. like feels great. All the hand-me-downs are super cute.
Yeah, hand-me-down baby clothes are the way to go.
Right? So I labeled everything. There's a short sleeve onesie row, a long sleeve onesie row, pajamas. And then I got these drawer dividers
Where
from
did you
Amazon.
Get those? Amazon? Can you share the link? Because I need
oh,
some.
Oh, I shared
okay,
it
thank you.
On our stories.
Oh, it's on there?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll go back.
I'll put it in our highlights so it will be readily accessible to all.
Well, thank you.
You're so welcome. I love drawer dividers.
I do
have them
too,
in my dresser. Oh, they're the best. So I'm feeling good. And then I got the mattress for the daybed. I got bedding for the daybed at Target. I got the mattress on Amazon. Like, it's all coming. I took a nap on the bed today just to
break
test
it
out. It's very comfortable.
I believe it.
So, yeah. So I'm feeling so much better about that whole situation. Like, I'm at the point now where it's like, okay, even though the crib's not put together, if the baby came, it would be fine because we have a pack and play and we have the baby dome.
Which did not exist.
The baby dome is a new invention.
When I had children. The baby dome, it's like a tiny circular... flat little thing.
Like it's like a
flat...
mini pack and play
yeah.
with a cover.
To protect it from
the sun.
Oh, okay.
It
so
has
it's for
SPF.
Outside. Oh.
Mm-hmm. You can take it like on a picnic.
I can't wait to see that baby dome in action.
To the beach.
Oh, it's going to be fun.
Yeah. I go on so many picnics.
You do. You're always picnicking the beach. Yeah. You can't stop picnicking.
Yeah. So at least like I'm just feeling much calmer about that whole situation.
That is what we want.
We had a prenatal meeting with our doula.
Dory, explain what a doula does.
So this is a birth doula. So she is just going to be assisting during labor. She'll come, like if I go into labor, when I go into labor at home, she will come when I want her to come. And then she'll go to the hospital with us, and then she'll be with us the entire time. And just kind of like guiding us through things and being our advocate with the doctor and the nurses, supporting Matt, supporting me, giving me like comfort positions.
We're going to talk more about this on this episode.
Yes.
Throughout the whole episode.
So yeah, just I guess heads up anyone for whom pregnancy talk is upsetting or triggering, we will be talking more about pregnancy.
Yes.
Good
heads up.
And I'm also trying to get back into easy cooking because I had found myself slipping back into a pretty expensive takeout habit.
You want a penne arrabbiata recipe?
Sure.
It's very easy.
Okay.
It's really good. I just made it for lunch all week.
Great.
I'll hook you up with that.
Okay, I can't wait. I made a great frittata.
I saw you whipped it out when you got to my home.
Yeah, I was like, here's my frittata.
Yeah.
I made a great salad yesterday.
So then I would say be gentle on yourself here. The takeout habit, you're 30-something weeks pregnant.
It's true.
Standing and cooking in a hot kitchen.
Yeah.
It's okay if you're relying on... great if you're feeling passionate about cooking, but also like... So you're getting takeout right now. If it's within your means, it's okay.
Anyway, we're going to take a short break.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
I like to care for my skin, duh. And it's also something that I do love to kind of like get into the research on.
You do have a curious mind.
Look, I have a curious mind. I can't help it.
You do.
But today's sponsor, OneSkin, has made that easy because they do their own fantastic research for their products. In fact, their products are scientifically validated to improve your skin's health while targeting the root cause of aging. The secret is OneSkin's proprietary OS1 peptide. It's the first ingredient proven to switch off the aging cells that cause lines, wrinkles, and thinning skin, and they've got several studies to back it up. They also have an amazing new sunscreen.
Ooh, our favorite.
Our fave. It's the OS1 Shield Protect and Repair SPF 30 Plus. It's got the peptide. It's a mineral sunscreen. It's got antioxidants. It comes in tinted and untinted. What can't this thing do? I'm just saying. I love it. It's so easy to use. And I love that it's just like, zoop, and it feels so nice going on. But don't take my word. Nice. Don't take my word for it. OneSkin has over 4,000 five-star reviews and was recently recognized by Fast Company as one of the most innovative brands of 2024. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code FOREVER at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code FOREVER. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, and please support your show and tell them we sent you.
Our guest today is Erica Chitty Cohen. Erica, we're so excited you're here.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Let me knock out this bio so we can tell everybody who you are. Erica is a doula, educator, and author. She's also the co-founder and CEO of Loom. Loom provides empowered education from periods to parenting. Erica began her work in San Francisco, volunteering as a doula within the prison system, working with pregnant inmates. And she went on to build a successful doula and health coaching practice here in Los Angeles and has been featured in Women's Health, Vogue, Goop, The Cut, and Marie Claire. And she has guided thousands of people in their transition from pregnancy to parenthood in her practice and through her book, Nurture, A Modern Guide to Pregnancy, Birth, and Early Motherhood. Erica currently teaches... Kate, did I really just say that you teach her?
I do, though.
Erica currently teaches and sees clients at Loom, focusing on periods, sex positivity, fertility, and pregnancy. And we are super, super pumped to have you with us today because we love all those topics.
The whole jitney. Is that that's right?
The jitney? Whole
shebang.
Shebang? Yeah, we'll go back to shebang. Yeah.
The jitney, all
the
I know is a...
kit and caboodle.
Okay. Yeah. Kit and caboodle.
The whole...
Yeah. I feel like my dad gave me so many of those...
Yeah, words isms. That might not be real. Real. Like our parents made them up.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, those. And I can speak to Erica's wonderful abilities because she taught half of my childbirth class.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it was really amazing.
Do you feel like you're endowed with... everything you could possibly know about childbirth?
Yes. And my husband now knows how to give me a massage.
That's the most important.
A labor appropriate massage. Ooh,
very good.
So
it's all I could.
Exactly. Like if there's one thing I could take away from the class, that is it.
Every partner, every support partner knows how to gently rub down a person in childbirth.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Small but important skills.
Indeed.
Erica, can we kind of just start from the beginning of you getting into being a doula and what kind of got you interested and what your experiences have been like now providing these services for many years?
Yeah. So, you know, my kind of entree to doula work actually came from me deciding that kind of working in the PR kind of fashion art area space was not really for me.
And you had also gone to culinary school,
yes,
right?
So before many lives, many masters. I went to culinary school before I went to college. I had a very supportive home economics teacher in high school, and food was a big part of our home. My mom actually also went to culinary school when I was like seven, somewhere around there. But the doula work kind of came from my interest initially in midwifery, and I was doing all my nursing prerequisites to apply to this master's program in San Francisco. They have a really fantastic program at UCSF. It's a MEPEN program, which is a master's to entry midwifery program. So if you already have a baccalaureate, you can basically do all the nursing prereqs and then go through the program. It's 2 years. It's accelerated.
Oh, cool.
It's an amazing program. And so en route to prepping for that, I found out about doulas. And for me, what I loved about doulas was that they are focused on the psychoeducational component of the process. They're really helping people discover what's going to be best for them and mm-hmm. helping them become the best possible advocates for themselves. And I really loved that because I consider myself to be a pretty decent communicator. I like taking big concepts and kind of diluting them down to make them easy for people to digest. And I love building relationships. And I really saw that, okay, that's really where doulas sit, as opposed to clinicians like a midwife or a nurse or a doctor. They're going to be focusing on vitals. They're going to be focusing on all of the physiological happenings within the birthing process, which are absolutely key and vital. But I loved the emotional space and the educational space. And so for me, I really, and where I really hope, you know, care is going in the reproductive space in general is this kind of more person-centered care where the clinicians and, you know, lay people and educators like myself are kind of working in tandem to be able to give people, you know, a more holistic and not holistic in like crystals, I'm in the woods, but like holistic, like, hi, what are you eating? How's your relationship? Mm-hmm. You know, what's going on? Or do you have, you know, trauma? You know, how do we kind of give you, you know, a competent, you know, healthcare and just care experience.
For listeners who might not be familiar with doulas, mm-hmm. can you explain what they do?
Yeah, so doulas essentially are typically, sometimes we have co-occurring, you know, competencies or certifications or backgrounds, but essentially they're typically a lay person that is providing support, educational support to a person moving through different reproductive experiences. So there are birth doulas that work with people during their pregnancy and labor and delivery. Then there are postpartum doulas who typically work from delivery to about 8 weeks of life of the baby, not the mother. Even though the focus is actually of a postpartum doula is to really mother the mother and to tend to her or mother the parent, previously pregnant person, if they don't identify as female. And then there also are abortion and miscarriage doulas who can support people as those transitions are happening, whether it's actually being there during the process or following up with them as the kind of process unfolds. And the idea really is we're not typically answering clinical questions. We can kind of help triage and be like, you need to go to your care provider for X, Y, and Z. But we're ideally creating containment for the experience because the experience has so much activation and oftentimes trying to offload that experience with someone who doesn't have a lot of experience within those experiences mm-hmm. can feel like a major barrier. So the idea is when people are leaning into us and asking us for our support, we do a lot of normalizing because a lot of the physiological events that accompany any of those experiences can feel very dysregulating for someone mm-hmm. and it's your first time. But when you've, you know, supported a ton of abortions or been to a ton of births, you know, you kind of are like, yeah, this is actually par for the course. So that's really how doulas function.
Cool. I also have a podcast with my husband about infertility and IVF. Yes. And we have always said that there should be more infertility doulas.
Yes. 100%. I'm sorry.
Can you just like make that happen?
Yes. Well, actually, so we have fertility coaching at Loom. And so I do act as a fertility coach or educator or doula, mm-hmm. essentially. The doula model of care being we're looking at your entire life and seeing how all of that plugs in. So when people come to Loom for fertility coaching, I'm not necessarily, you know, breaking down with them whether, you know, IVI or IUI or, you know, IVF is going to be the best direction. But we're kind of just looking at how are you dealing with all of this constant decision making?
Yeah.
And all of this anticipatory energy and all of this catastrophic thinking, you know, yeah. how do we like integrate all of those pieces and just kind of maybe have a laugh about it or have a cry about it? Or, mm-hmm. you know, what else can we do to kind of better support you as you're continuing to be in this grueling experience, you know?
That's so valuable.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about why you started Loom and what Loom's kind of role is in the whole fertility, birth, et cetera, community?
Totally. Yeah. So my co-founder and I, Quinn Lemberg, started Loom because we felt that there just wasn't anything like it, you mm-hmm. know, and there still isn't. And I think we both felt that the kind of reproductive experience particularly pregnancy and parenting, which is kind of where our departure point was. I always say this, so I feel like I, for anyone who's heard me speak anywhere else, will be like, she's always saying that. But it's, I felt like that, we felt like that industry was kind of like stuck under a pink dust ruffle. And it was like, you're pregnant now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's just like, here is your lazy boy. And like, here's right. your, you know, what to expect with your expecting, which I really hope that at some point that cover gets redone, because when you look at the woman on that cover, it's just like, I don't know if I want that experience exactly. I want something.
I don't have that book. I haven't even seen that cover.
Good work, yeah, Dory.
Just moving on. Just moving on. But the idea is, we just thought, why can't the experience of, you know, getting pregnant, having a baby, learning about your body, you know, navigating that first year of parenthood, feel like any other experience that you enjoy in your life, like a good dinner, like a nice trip, like a, you know, an experience that you resonate with. Because for us, I think philosophically, we believe that health education improves your health outcomes.
Right.
Even if you don't necessarily have a positive physiological outcome, I think understanding what's going to happen to you and feeling more supported there is going to be a better experience for you. And we really felt like it would be great to just like lower the barrier of entry to health education, so that more people are like, that seems kind of cool. Like, maybe I will take a class there, you know? Because most people prep more for their driver's license, their wedding, you know, you name it, more so than getting pregnant or being pregnant or their period or even their, you know, their sexual health. People are just kind of like, I guess it'll just kind of happen. And so much of that has to do with, you know, the culture, especially in the United States. It's so tamped down, and it's so, you know, there's kind of this like religious undercurrent. There's this patriarchal kind of override that doesn't really make a lot of space for us to feel comfortable even wanting to ask questions. I think Quinn actually said this the other day. She was just like, you basically are you are shamed for wanting information, and then when you ask for the information, the exchange is also uncomfortable and shameful and loaded. And so I think that's really what Loom is trying to kind of stave off, is making the desire for education feel aspirational and fun and cool, and then also, you know, meeting people where they're at. You know, we want to give people as many options as possible. We don't have a specific thing that we think is the right thing. You know, I always feel like the model of the curriculum, which I created for, I basically like wrote all the curriculum for most of our classes, is always been from a harm reduction standpoint. So harm reduction is like a term that's typically used like in the addiction space, in that, you know, we're trying to bring you to norm do the least amount of harm to you as possible, right? So especially with pregnancy, you know, there's this idea of what the norm is or what the right thing is, but to try and bring someone to that, you can do a lot of damage. I'm sure you've just even peripherally had that experience of people being like, oh, this is the right thing, or that's the right thing. You're like, I don't.
Oh, totally.
I'm just like, leave me be. I'm going to definitely going to get there. I want to do it my own way. Yes. And so the hope really with Loom is like, in every single class, regardless of whether it's pregnancy, period, sex, whatever, parenting, that we are, you know, helping to instill autonomy, but we're giving you like a nice cabinet of options, and everybody can just, you know, feel comfortable within their own experience, as opposed to being like, yeah, this is the only way that you can do this. Sorry, I'm such a gesticulator. My hands are everywhere, but I'm going to figure it out so that I don't ka-ka-ka-ka everywhere. Yeah.
Can we talk a little bit about accessibility to doulas?
Yes.
Because I was very fortunate to have a doula at both of my births. Birth is? What is with me today?
It's good. It's wonderful.
I mean, I have two kids. Maybe that's why.
How old are they?
They're 6 and 8.
Yeah.
So they're big people.
Are they home now too? Is it spring break?
No. Okay. Thank God. We've already passed that.
All right.
they are home, just like living their life.
Okay.
They're at school. But I feel like one of the most challenging things with our healthcare system and just the way, you know, women are treated in general, is that we don't often have access to things that are available to us, especially if we're in a low income situation. So I'm curious, what can women do to have access to these wonderful things that you offer, something like a doula? But if they don't have, let's say, the financial means necessarily to get one, what systems are in play, or what are you hoping to see come into play so that a doula could be something that everyone could have it at childbirth or at a miscarriage or whatnot and not have to think twice about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think from a macro standpoint, it'd be really great to see insurances or insurance. I don't know, everyone says it differently. You know, support reimbursing doulas for their services. There's enough empirical information now that will let clinicians know that having a doula in the room does help reduce, interventions and helps to kind of support a more positive outcome, regardless of the kind of the way that birth goes physiologically, but just the patient reporting that they felt better in the experience than, say, not having a doula. So that would be great to see. You know, some states are doing a better job than others in order to kind of build that into something like Medi-Cal or Medicare so that there is that accessibility. But I think we have still a little bit of a long way to go. I do feel like, you know, as a consumer, there is a lot of power there. I think the more consumers are going to their insurance companies and being like, you should be covering this, that's where we can kind of see, you know, more and more traction. For people that are, you know, low income and, you know, and even for people that are just like on a budget and they're just like, I want a doula, but I don't really know how we're going to figure it out. I really always like to say that, and again, not to be overly gendered, I think female identifying people do have a maternal or a sisterly quality to them, whether or not they've ever had a birth experience themselves. And so, you know, if you have a friend who, kind of holds that space in your life and they're willing, you know, it's pretty easy for them to, you know, read my book or, you know, read The Birth Partner by Penny Simpkin, or, you know, most doula trainings aren't that expensive. If they, you know, you wanted to put it together with your shower to like get your best friend a doula training and she could go do it and then she could be your doula. You know, a lot of it in terms of obviously experience is, you know, very helpful and being able to know that this person's been to tons of births. But, you know, if that's not something that's within your economic reach, I think there's a lot of ways to kind of commandeer your family and friends, if you're in resonance with them and you actually want them in the room, to kind of stand in for you. So I think that's sometimes a good way to go.
When we're talking about family and friends support, what are some of the things that family and friends can do for people who, let's say, are going through pregnancy loss or infertility? I feel like we get this question a lot, people wanting to know how they can support their friends.
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, it's such a sensitive issue. I think oftentimes, you know, as a friend, you don't want to, pry. You don't want to be too cloying. And you also don't want to be too overly sentimental, because there are people who believe and feel very comfortable that a miscarriage is just their body's kind of natural way of, you know, taking care of something that might not have been, you know, vital, might not have been right. And with infertility, again, you know, depending on how many times they've been trying or for how long, it's just like, do you want me to keep checking in with you?
Right.
So I think my best advice is to actually try and have pretty transparent conversations that aren't necessarily about the details of what's going on, but just asking, you know, do you still want me to check in with you about this? You know, it's kind of similar to when someone passes away, you know, when someone's grieving, you're kind of like, well, like, should I keep asking? And it's like, just check in, be like, how are you doing? Do you want to talk about this today? Just know I'm always down to talk about it anytime that you want to. And we also don't have to talk about it.
Right.
So it's just creating this very, like, you know, even valence of just want to, got it. Don't want to, fine. But just keep checking in about where they're at, you know? And also just understanding that sometimes, you know, if someone doesn't want to talk about it, that's not a reflection of you. Like, you're no longer not a good friend because they're not wanting to divulge about that part of their life. Because sometimes at the beginning of the, say, the infertility process, there's a lot of divulging. You're like talking about it all the time.
Yep.
And then there's a cap, you know, and sometimes certain friendships can become just a container for this experience. And that relationship, that the other person in the relationship, so I'm speaking as like the friend who's taking in the information, you start to feel like this is what the relationship is about. And then if all of a sudden, if they stop trying for a little bit, or they don't really want to talk about it anymore. It can create like a weird kind of energy, like shift in the relationship. And you're like, okay, well, how do we kind of find our way back to something more normal?
Yeah.
So I think it's just anticipating if you are the container right now and you're getting all of it, it might not always be that way. And to kind of prepare yourself for your friend to potentially want to shift gears and to kind of, you know, disassociate from that thing and just want to go back to kind of the way it was. So just being open and flexible around either taking a lot in or none, but just always checking in about like, where are you at with this, if that's helpful.
Yeah, no, I think that's really
great
helpful.
Advice. Yeah. And I think also as the on the friend side, I think it's really smart to suggest like preparing that the other person might not always be offering the info in that way. And that can sometimes feel like, oh no, what happened? You know, I mean, just thinking about that is really a really smart thing to consider. I haven't thought about that before.
Yeah, it's just kind of like, it's an empathic thing too. It's like trying not to take a lack of information sharing personally, because I think a lot of myself anyway, I definitely have lived a lot of my life kind of evaluating my value in relationships to how well this person thinks I'm taking care of them. And so if I'm not like inner sanctum getting all the deep secrets, I feel sometimes like, oh, maybe are we still okay? Like, is this relationship still working? And I've been doing a lot of work around just feeling more anchored around that their decision to divulge or disclose isn't necessarily a reflection of the relationship. You know, like it's okay for you to not be in this active caretaker mode all the time.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
What about partners?
Mm.
How can they be supportive to people in pregnancy or in other fertility-related situations?
Yeah, I think a desire to learn, you know. So I think kind of even pre-pregnancy, just around just the menstrual cycle, I feel that partners, male identifying, you know, or otherwise, should just take an avid interest in how the cycle works because it impacts them.
Yes.
You know?
Go on.
Yes. Yeah. It's not like just...
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm just... Yes.
Yes. You're like, yes, yes. Yeah, no, I feel the same way because I think it's kind of just like, oh, like you're bleeding now. So like maybe we like won't really have sex right now, or maybe we will because some people get a little bit more aroused when they're on their period. But there's a lot of just like focus on like the bleed. And then, you know, so essentially there are 4 different phases of your menstrual cycle. There's when you're bleeding, which is menstruation. And then there's the follicular phase, which is right after that. And that's usually for about 10 to 14 days or pre-ovulatory stage. Then you ovulate, and then you're post-ovulation, and you're in your luteal phase, which I've really been working hard to share with people that that is the phase. And you might have, you know, sharper symptoms during your luteal phase that are kind of forecasting that your period is coming. But I'm really focused on trying to just shift the narrative around PMS and having people engage more with the terminology of the phase, as opposed to like, I'm PMSing, like you're just in your luteal phase and here are the things. So I like started a little hashtag called I'm luteal on Instagram. So just if you are 10 to 14 days from bleeding, you are luteal. So share. Thank you. But with partners, I would love for them to know all of those different phases and be able to support their partners, you know, in kind. Like in our house, my husband doesn't use the word PMS. He's like, you're definitely luteal. Like, what's going on? Like, do you need this? Do you need that? And I do feel like just it takes me off of being defensive.
Yeah.
Like there's, when someone says, are you PMSing? Like, it's really negative. It's like a bummer, you mm-hmm. know? And you're just like, no, or like, yeah, you know, you immediately want to interact in an aggressive way. And I think language is everything. And so just leaning into available language that is less negatively connotative would be super helpful. Because I think as women, we already are already so hard on ourselves, and it's all, the whole system is built to make us feel bad.
Yeah.
So like wherever we can just like reclaim a little bit of space and like new language to like talk about ourselves, I think is great. And so like for, I share my period tracking app. I use Clue. Love Clue. And I share it with my husband. So he like knows what is going on. Mm-hmm. And we're not trying to get pregnant right now. It's just like a general kind of ecosystem check-in so that the reproductive experience is not solely my burden. And I feel like that's how it should be in most partnerships. And I actually think most partners are interested. It's just our system didn't set them up
yeah.
to like, it's like to want to know. I mean, I feel like we're in this time where like pop sci is like really cool. Like people want like, this is great pop sci. Like, here you go. Like, here's how it yeah. works. And they can like, you know, tell their friends.
Well, even like going back to, I remember in like fifth grade, sex ed, we were separated by with boys and girls, and the girls went off to learn about periods. And I don't know what the boys went off to learn, but like, why couldn't the boys also learn about periods?
Exactly.
But what you say about language just made me think about when women refer to themselves or other people refer to women as hormonal.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's also such a dismissive term.
Yeah. 100%.
Like, what does that mean? And why are you diminishing my feelings in that way?
Yeah, totally. And I think the word hormonal, you know, it could be reclaimed and co-opted differently because as people that have uteruses, we do have hormonal variability mm-hmm. through the month. So there is kind of like, you know, pre-ovulation, you know, estrogen or estradiol and testosterone are kind of like running the show. And then post-ovulation, it's a bunch of progesterone, which is like sleepy, drowsy, slow digestion, like low motivation, yada, yada. So we are hormonal, but mm-hmm. it's not a bad thing. It's
right.
just we live in a patriarchal society that does not really support the kind of ebb and flow
yeah.
of our bodies. So I can't remember where I was talking about this, but I'm really interested in like what the matriarchal workplace can look like, and because we don't actually know. And a big part of the matriarchal workplace actually has to do with talking about cycles and not just being like, here's a great, you know, parental leave. It's like, okay, that's all great, but pregnancy is a experience that we can see.
Mm-hmm.
So we really want to do something about it, mm-hmm. right? But, you know, menstruation and other kind of hidden reproductive experiences like endometriosis or fibroids or all these other things that are happening that are affecting, you know, women or uterine bearing people in the workforce aren't seen. And if we're trying to invite more and more women into, you know, higher and higher, you know, areas within, you know, the workplace, we've got to really fix the system a little bit.
Yeah.
Because then another hidden, you know, kind of reproductive experience is menopause or perimenopause.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're not talking about like this stuff now, then you get there and it's also just like, oh, she's going crazy. Like she's losing it, you know?
Yep.
And that, all of that is the issue. So it's like, I really see, And the work I'm really interested in doing through Loom with, you know, we're interested in expanding and doing a digital platform, but also going into corporate spaces and startup spaces and just trying to kind of lift the veil off of, you know, periods, cycling, menopause, pregnancy. So it's not this like, you know, this like malady that we have to like, you know, create some kind of, you know, human resources plan around. It's just like it's happening to people. So how can we, you know, better support them?
Kind of jumping off on that, can you talk a little bit about the kind of unspoken quote unquote rule of not telling anyone you're pregnant until you're out of your first trimester. I found that, I don't know like why that's passed down as the like unspoken law of pregnancy, but I started telling people earlier than that. But what I found mostly was that I was suffering through some really serious, like, you know, through all the symptoms of pregnancy, but doing it silently because I didn't want to tell anyone. But at some point I'm like, why, what are, am I not telling people to save them from grief if this pregnancy isn't sustainable? Like, I don't know how that started and what we can do to really transition out of that and be, as a society, more comfortable communicating when we're in early pregnancy, talking about it. I don't know. This is kind of a rambling question.
No, but it's not rambling at all. I mean, I think you're spot on. I mean, my really dear friend, Dr. Jessica Zucker, she started, she's a psychologist, and she started a platform on Instagram called I Had a Miscarriage. Mm. And I mentioned her first because, you know, miscarriages are pretty common, actually, especially for women, you know, kind of like 33 and up, I believe. It's quite common to have a miscarriage under, you know, say 10 weeks. And the idea is that, you know, once you're past the first trimester, there is more viability of the fetus. And, you know, it's the idea is it's easier to kind of tell more people now because we think the baby's going to,
right,
the pregnancy's going to maintain. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think, again, this will differ for people depending on what culture they come from, depending on what religion they are, because there are certain cultures and religions where you don't really talk that much about the pregnancy because it's you know, there's like superstition and like sacredness and all of that. But I think if you're just like regular schmegular and in the middle and really not understanding like why you can't talk about it, I really would kind of encourage you to challenge that, because my feeling is we need community around all of these experiences. So if you do happen to have a miscarriage, you know, in that early stage, I would think that you would want your community to be able to show up for you and to hold space for you, because even if you only are a few weeks pregnant, once the pregnancy is no longer there, you are going to go through a hormonal shift. You are going to have like almost like a kind of a minute postpartum experience. And so having people bring you food, having people check in on you, would be awesome, you know?
Yeah.
And so for me, I think, I don't know where the genesis of that comes from. I do think it's connected to the idea of not feeling comfortable talking about the loss if a loss does happen, and just being nervous there. But I do think that it's shifting now more and more. I think more people are wanting to speak about it earlier. And I think it's a good thing, because it just creates more community, more support, and permission. When you hear someone say like, oh, I'm only 4 weeks and like I'm like really excited, that's going to land for someone else and give them permission to potentially do that themselves when they're in that position. So I think it's just, we have to kind of lead by example with that. And I think talking about it is probably a good thing if that feels, you know, in resonance for
right,
you.
Right, yeah. I wouldn't want to assume that everybody would want to do that, but yeah, it seems like there's this, you know what I'm saying,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
yeah, this weird,
yeah, like, don't talk about it on,
yeah, the, like, we've touched on this a little before, yeah, with Angela Garbus, mm-hmm, and yeah, I mean, as someone who did go through IVF and talked about it really publicly, I found that I was glad I talked about it publicly, like when I had a chemical pregnancy, because people were really supportive. And I think I would have felt really alone and, mm-hmm, isolated if I had no one to turn to for, yeah, that. Yeah. So I'm all in favor of people just
letting it out.
But like, if you don't want to, that's fine too. That's,
yeah. But having the option, I, yes, think, and creating a space where you get to make that choice isn't,
totally,
culturally made for you, I feel like is so important.
Yes.
Yeah.
Can we talk a little bit about your own personal self-care? Because as a caregiver, I mean, essentially, in my mind, that is a lot of what the work is that you do, is giving care.
Yes.
So how then do you take care of yourself? What are your self-care practices? And what do you do when they get neglected? How do you bring them back into focus?
Well, you know, I definitely am a workaholic. I love work. Also happen to love the work I'm doing too. So it's not just the process. Like I'm passionate about the work. So, the self-care thing can go out the window sometimes, but my feeling around it is my approach to self-care is very aggressive. So I gotta get in there. So whether it's like therapy or it's, you know, taking a long bath, I'm really into baths. I love like a good soak. Like I'll put magnesium flakes in there. I'll put essential oils in there. I also love listening to music. I find music is just like such an escape for me. I usually work listening to music. Sometimes one thing I did the other day that I was like, why haven't I done this sooner? So I'm a big Ariana Grande fan. Take it, leave it.
I'll take
it. Doesn't matter. But I, you know, woke up. So we have a Sonos system. Shout out to Sonos in our bedroom. And my husband left for work. And I've been like playing, what's on it? Ghosting. Like on, I have another thing. I will play songs again and again and again and again. Just because there's some kind of alchemy to listening to something like 100 times. Like it just really like moves through your system somehow. So I woke up and I just like blared Ghosting on the Sonos and just like put the covers over my head and just stayed in bed and just listened to it really, really loud. Like it was 6:30 in the morning and it was just so nice. I was just like, this is great. Like full blast ambient music in the morning. And I was like, I got to do this more often. It was kind of like my own like sonic meditation. Like I think everyone finds their own way to like chill out.
Yeah.
But I loved it. And it was just like more, even though I have a younger brother, we're 6 years apart. So I kind of feel like I was an only child for a little while. And so I have a lot of like only child, like self-stimulating things that I like to do. And like, I like to just be alone. So that's a part of my self-care too. I'm as much as I'm very kind of like outward and obviously the job requires a lot of communication. I have to have a lot of time alone, mm-hmm. you know, just like sitting at home, not seeing anybody. Love my like, you know, my TV shows. It's got a real good penchant for some trash TV. Not trash TV, but my favorite show, RuPaul's Drag Race.
So good.
Forever. I'm a huge drag race fan. And cooking. I think cooking is a big space for, even though, like, you know, hand to the wind, I don't really have a lot of time to cook anymore because my hours are so crazy. And it was kind of hard for me to, like, admit that to myself. I just recently admitted that to myself because in my mind, I'm like, I cook a lot. And I'm like, no, I don't. I'd like to cook more. But just cooking and dancing and listening to music in the kitchen, like while I cook, is really nice. And I also like wine, but not on a, it's like more like a weekend thing for me, but I love really, really, really good wine. Mm. And we're lucky that there's just so much great wine in the city. And my good friend Helen has like a wine shop and I can just go in there and get anything in there is always good. So those are my things. And I said therapy too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I work out too, but it's only 2 days a week.
Okay.
That's all I can do.
All right.
But
you know what? That's it. That's it. Great.
Yeah.
You gave a great interview to Into the Gloss where you talked about your 70-30 rule.
Oh, yes.
Could you talk about that, please?
Yes, because the fact is, as much as I love my clean, non-toxic beauty products, so great, but there's like stuff that just works that's not that good for you. And I really think that if 70% of the time what you're putting on your skin is healthy, low toxicity, etc., then like 30% of the time it can be a little garbagey because it's has performance, so it's fine. You know, that's kind of how I balance it out, especially with lipsticks where you're like just craving pigment and you're just like, this is,
or like a long wearing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. There are things. So yeah. And I feel like because most of my major dailies are clean.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, it's like the little slivers, you know? And also I locked my hair. I would say maybe I went natural. Really don't love that term, but that's what we use in the black lady hair community. Maybe 8 years ago, and then I locked my hair about 6 years ago. And so that cut down my exposure to like perms and like relaxers and stuff like that, which are, I mean, that is, that really is crazy because that is so toxic.
Yeah.
And to like be having that like since you were like, you know, five or six, you know?
Yeah.
So I really feel like that took away kind of like my biggest toxin exposure. But yeah, I think the 70-30 rule, easier. Don't be so hard on yourself. Just, you know, toothpaste, maybe clean. Body oil clean, you know, base foundation, maybe not.
And you're a biologique recherche.
Oh my gosh.
Person?
Oh my gosh.
Because so is Dory.
I mean, I'm right there with you.
So let's talk about it, okay? Let's talk about our love for P50. 1970.
I mean, I'm just going to let this connection happen across the table.
Okay. I mean, I'm not using it now because it's really not pregnancy.
That is my only pregnancy fear is when that has to go. That has to go and I have to switch to the other thing that doesn't burn. I like the burn feeling on the face.
Yeah, it doesn't burn.
Somebody else we just talked to is also like a 1970, like specifically that formula, loyal to a T.
Yeah, loyal to a T. And I love my retinol. So gotta, you know, just whenever that spirit baby comes down the pipeline, we just have to put those products to the side.
I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah, it is. The other thing I'm really loving that I just started using is Vintner's Daughter, the face serum.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Oh, yep. Yep.
It's real
nice.
Good.
It's real nice.
Real nice. Real nice. It's like a real expensive thing, but you know, again, it's super clean and it's like it's going on your face and you know, it's really, really great and it smells really good too.
You gotta counteract the phenol.
Yeah. Gotta go in there and extract it. But you know, I was emailing with April, the founder from Vintner's Daughter, and I told her kind of what my product regime was, and she was like, you know what? She's like, I used to be a really big Biologique Recherche fan, and you'll be really happy with how this product works because I built it to try and be like
like
the cleanest but high performance, you know, face oil. And as soon as I just knew that she liked Biologique, I was like, you know what?
Right.
I'm going to try this.
Yeah.
You get me.
You got it. You understand what's going on. I'm like, I don't have a huge, like, skincare regime. I'm pretty like simple, but I just want everything to work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not too much to ask.
No, that's all we want in life.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And my, the woman who, my like esthetician sensei, Jen Kramer, Corrective Skincare,
love you,
got me on glycolic salicylic acid pads, which are in my 30. Because they're not exactly ideal for your face, but it totally stopped my acne in its tracks.
Wow.
Yeah, because I hyperpigment and, you know, for me, it's not that there's like a ton. It's just like whatever shows up is just like mark, 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 mark. So it's been a really lovely like 2 years of just not having that happen anymore. So.
Hey. Wow. You've got a good like a. Good system. I feel like you have it figured out.
I love a life hack. I'm like, can you make it easy? How much easier can this be? I'll do it.
Well, Erica, it has been such joy.
Oh, it's over. It's so fun.
I know.
What a treat.
I could talk to you for another like 10 hours.
Totally. This is so fun.
But thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Where can our listeners find you in the interwebs and also in real life if they're local to the LA area?
Totally. So in real life, you can find me at Loom. Not all the time, but it's on Pico and Cochrane. And we've got all of our classes and our coaching there. And the two classes I teach are our periods class and our sex class. And then I also co-facilitate KIN, which is our LGBTQIA group for folks that are planning to conceive. So if you come to any of those classes, you'll see me. And if not, you'll see one of our wonderful educators at another class. And then on the internet, I'm just my full name, Erica Chitty Cohen on Instagram. I'm also on Twitter. I am not a great tweeter, but I'm trying. And I'm actually just enjoying following the news and the memes on there. And then Loom is This Is Loom on Instagram and thisisloom.com.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, ladies.
So, Dory, last week you had intentioned that you were going to relax on your solo baby moon.
I checked that box.
You did it.
I did
A+ for you.
Thank you so much.
Don't give out grades on this podcast.
No, we don't.
But you would get one if we
I
did.
Would. How is your meditating going?
I'm kind of doing it when the mood strikes.
Okay.
But it has really helped.
Oh, good.
And like just knowing that it's a tool that I have, I think it would really help manage my anxiety. So I'd like to keep it going.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm working on it.
All right.
But also trying to do it in a way where I'm not passing judgment on myself.
Uh-huh. Mm. It's a fine line.
I mean, I love passing judgment on myself. It's like my number one hobby.
What about this week? What do you got going on?
Well, Dory, my husband is out of town for work for about the next 3 months.
Yeah.
And which is okay. Like we are totally a team and our kids are like a part of our family team and we have the means to kind of, you know, if I need to get a babysitter, we can afford to do that. You know, like it's okay. But I have to kind of find my footing a little bit in terms of not having him here as like my, you know, as my co-parent and my co-partner and just my like dude who I like having around. So I'm just kind of finding like my rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I have to like really stay on top of stuff since I'm the only adult in the house. So I'm the one doing all the things. And, you know, like sometimes if I don't just like sit down and get it done, it'll be like 11 o'clock at night and I'm just like kind of floating around doing things. And then I'm tired the next day, yada, yada, yada. So just really kind of finding my new schedule, my new footing, if you will.
Yeah.
So just so like, you know, my kids, everybody's, we stay functioning.
It's a lot.
It is a lot. But again, like I feel pretty fortunate to be in the situation that we're in. Like our kids are old enough that like, for example, on the weekend, they get up, you know, 7 a.m. and just go right and they know how to turn that TV on. And I stay in bed. You know, it's not like I have twin newborns or something.
Totally.
So I'm all good. How about you?
Well, you know, we're getting down to the wire here.
Dory, it's soon.
It's happening.
It is.
It's April.
Holy shit.
I mean, by the time this airs, it'll be really soon.
I'm excited.
And I need to like, you know, I need to pack that hospital bag.
For some reason, I'm like having a nervous heart racing situation right now. It's soon.
It's so soon.
We've been doing this podcast from a point where you were like, again, like planning out what you do if you didn't get pregnant.
Yeah.
And you did.
And I did.
And here we are. Okay. Yeah. Why am I taking this on? I don't know, but I'm so excited for you.
Thank you. So yeah. So my intention this week is to really like start that final baby prep. So here we go.
What food do you want me to bring after you give birth? Do you want to wait and decide after you have the baby?
Oh, you're so sweet.
I mean, I love to bring food. Do you want McDonald's?
What about
In-N-Out?
Oh, I was going to say.
Or like I'll make something too.
I was going to say, what about a lasagna?
Oh, yes. I love a lasagna.
Your lasagna is so good.
Oh, can I make that mushroom one?
Yeah.
Or would you like a meat one?
Well.
How about two?
I mean, I don't know. They're both so good.
Everybody, you heard it here first. I'm going to make Dory and Matt two lasagnas. Two lasagnas coming right up. That would be fun. I would love that.
That'll make giving birth so exciting because I'll know that there's lasagna at the end.
Just push that baby out and then dive right into cheese and
noodle. Speaking of, I'm sure you saw the news about the Garfield phones.
Oh, that they were like appearing on shores
everywhere? Yes, in France. And then it turned out a shipping container had like been shipwrecked in the 80s.
I had a Garfield aquarium where in his belly you put the fish. It was dope. It was
that's
so great.
Amazing.
Garfield paraphernalia. Still got it. Still got a. That's definitely a choice.
A whole set of Garfield Pez dispensers. Anyway.
Wow. Okay. We went off, but we're back. All right. I'm going to cook you food. You're going to pack a bag. I'm going to make a schedule and we're going to be okay.
I can't wait.
Friends, you can always call us, leave a voicemail 781-591-0390 or email us at forever35podcast@gmail.com.
You may join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/forever35podcast. And the password there is serums.
And if you like this show, please do leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, tell a friend, or mention us on social media.
And just a reminder that everything we mention on the show is always on our website, forever35podcast.com. And you can follow us on Instagram at forever35podcast and on Twitter at forever35pod.
Oh, I have to tell you one more thing.
Yeah.
Forever 35 is hosted and produced by Dory Shafrir and Kate Spencer and produced and edited by Sammy Junio. And Lane Hammer is our assistant. I almost forgot.
Oh my goodness.
Bye.
Bye.